Next Time We Might Play Better by Peter Tinniswood. With Graham Crowden as Mr. Leslie Deeds and Hugh Dixon as the narrator.
When I first met him all those years ago, he said to me,
"All you need for a happy and contented life, my boy, is a saw, an axe, and a gimlet."
I smelt a rasp of whiskey on his silly breath. I saw the rake of his philanderer's nose. He was eating a gorgonzola cheese sandwich. Yes, indeed. That's what he said to me all those years ago.
"All you need for a happy and contented life, my boy, is a saw, an axe, and a gimlet." No, play better. For the love of God, I implore you, play better. I am so sorry, Herr Wagner. 100,000 apologies. Entschuldigung.
The stroke of the ballast office clock. The sandwich men filing by. Plum stones spat from atop a hero's pillar. The gulp of the queasy sea. The wedge of the sand hurrying for crabs. The tripes and the sneering weeds. Mr. Leslie Deeds flays at his fiddle, and the bees flee for their hives, battening down their ears.
I hate this place, Esmond. Why hasn't it been razed to the ground by German bombers?
This is a neutral country, Penelope.
So are you, Esmond. Oh,
this dressing room smells of goats.
Do you love me, Esmond?
You know I don't, Penelope.
I know. I was just asking on the off chance.
Meanwhile, in the smoke-snuffed circle bar of the ancient Toothless Theatre, Mr. Leslie Deeds raises his voice.
"It is the bill, you see. The bill, the bill."
"What about the bill?"
"My dear sir, it won't do."
"Would you ever stop frothing at the mouth and tell me why it won't do?"
"Because, my dear Duffy, we are quality, quality performers. Out of the top drawer. We have appeared in the finest concert halls in Europe. We have played in pump rooms, palm courts, winter gardens, grand hotels, chandelier-infested salons in front of sovereign emperors, princelings of the royal blood, and Magyar countesses with towering alabaster bosoms and nipples as rampant as leaping salmon."
"Another whiskey?"
"I am obliged."
"What do you want from me, Mr. Deeds?"
"A change in the order of the bill. It is monstrous that we should be expected to appear and play our creative concourse twixt the two acts currently designated on your bill. Acts! Dear God, just look at them. We are preceded by Carl Bizzles, fire eater, sword swallower, and novelty hydrologist. Ghastly. The man shaves beneath his armpits. Obviously the creature is a pansy. He reeks of lavender water and scented toilet paper. That, however, I could tolerate and accommodate if it weren't for the act that succeeds us. Celia Negus and her perky poodles. A song, a dance, and a saunter down memory lane." "A song? Dear God, the woman sings as though she has six heads. A dance? Great heavens, she dances as though she had 12 feet. And those poodles, my dear Duffy, never before in the whole of my life have I had my shin bone mounted so frequently in the public domain. It will not do, Duffy. It will not do."
Let us leave Mr. Leslie Deeds and his colleagues to wallow in the thin gruel of their past, which is, to be precise, June the 16th in the year of our Lord 1943. Let us establish ourselves for the time being in the heel tap and gut twang of the present, which is, to be more precise, June the 16th in the year of our Lord, 1966. It's a thin-shanked day of intermittent showers and gritty sunshine. We're in the tea rooms of Atkinson Sivright's department stores. tea cakes are served on silver salvers. The fancies are served on pure lace doilies. The nippies wear starched smiles. On a stage stricken with palms and grumbling succulents, the quartet plays selections from Carmen. Quartet, I say? Yes, indeed. For along the long and slow and painful drag to the present, Mr. Leslie Deeds has acquired a new recruit to his musical ensemble. Mrs. Clyte, oboe. The white-armed Mrs. Clyte. Mrs. Clyte with a body like a dromedary and lips like lemmings. Each evening in her somber lodging house, she is mounted somberly by Mr. Deeds. How she squirms.
Just listen to it, Mr. Sivrach. Just listen to that racket.
Beautiful, isn't it, Mr. Martindale? The music of the spheres.
Beg your pardon, Mr. Sivrach?
Such artistic sensitivity. Such creative interpretation. I've never heard Gounod played better in the whole of my born days. I have not.
And with those words, Mr. Sivrite clutched vaguely at his throat, crumpled softly to the floor, and expired of an instant from an attack of his heart.
We shall, of course, play at his funeral tea, Mr. Martindale.
It's very kind of you, Mr. Deeds, but I wouldn't want to put you to all that trouble.
Trouble, Mr. Martindale? Trouble? It is our duty. Nay, it is our pleasure and joy to pay tribute of a musical nature to a man whose services to the community, both cultural and commercial, have been an inspiration to one and all, regardless of age, gender, or station in life. And on a personal note, Mr. Martindale, may I add that the ex-Mr. Sibright, currently deceased, frequently allowed me to purchase gentlemen's toiletries at a mere fraction above the cost.
And so they played at old Mr. Sivrite's funeral tea. Mr. Leslie Deeds, resplendent in frock coat and stiff-winged collar, surveyed the assembled mourners and nodded and beamed, and his face flushed pink. And his loins yearned for the propinquity of Mrs. Clyte's noble and carnal accoutrements.
Can the musicians not be silenced, Mr. Martindale?
Your father was very fond of them when he was alive, Mr. Sivrite.
Yes, but he's now dead, Mr. Martindale. That's why we're having a funeral tea for him. There'd be no complaints about the boiled ham, have there?
Oh, certainly not, Mr. Sivrite. And the Chitlins and Haslett have gone down a treat, too. And as for the polony, the response has been nothing short of ecstatic.
Oh, that noise! That terrible din! Just you wait, Mr. Martindale. Just you wait while I take formal control, and then you'll see. Oh, yes, old friend, you'll not see their backsides for dust.
That evening, blissfully unaware of their fate, the quartet took a meagre supper in their sober lodgings. Mr. Deeds and Mrs. Clyte repaired early to their bucking, bouncing, resentful bed. Deeds' daughter, Penelope, cello, gazed in rapture at Mr. Esmond Machin, accordion, banjolele, and kettle drum.
Esmond?
Yes.
I love you.
I know.
Do you love me?
No.
Oh, dear. Oh, dearie, dearie me.
And upstairs in the loin-girt bedroom, the talk went thus.
You know how I look at it, Leslie.
Tell me, dear lady, tell me.
You were shipwrecked into my arms.
Indeed I was. You wisp-wasted sorceress.
You came to the shores of my love and my carnal desires, and I would not set you free.
Indeed you would not, my bright-eyed, willow-thighed goddess.
We've been together 7 years.
Indeed, indeed. indeed, dear lady.
I love you, Leslie.
And I love you, madame. I adore you.
What do you adore most about me, Leslie?
No doubt about it, my slim-ankled enchantress. No doubt about it at all. I am enraptured about it. I am enslaved by it. I am eternally ensnared by it.
Oh, what is it, Leslie? Tell me what it is.
Your oboe, dear lady. Your lovely, wondrous, rampant oboe.
Let us return a while to the past. They are on board ship, an ocean liner. Not a distinguished ocean liner, a rather aged ocean liner, in fact. An ocean liner that has seen better days. An ocean liner not in the first flush of its youth. It is June the 16th. The year is 1948. The vessel is the SS Fox Rock, ex-Marseilles, bound for the Spanish Main. Her master has ginger hair and wine-dark eyes. Her owner, Mr. Vasileva Konstantinos, is on board with his mistress, established in a perfumed, bowered stateroom with rugs of the softest wool, two silver baths, and a gold-rimmed basket that runs on casters. Mr. Konstantinos lies in a silver bath. His mistress bathes him. She towels him and anoints him with oil.
How lovely, how sensuous, how simpatico, how... What is that noise? Can you hear that noise? What is it?
I hear nothing.
Listen, woman. Listen hard.
Yes. Yes, yes, I hear it now.
What then? What is it?
The ship's orchestra?
Vibrato, Penelope! More vibrato, I beg of you! I implore you, more vibrato!
I feel sick.
Hang on, dear sir, hang on! The vicissitudes and the briny must be borne with valor and brio! Valor and brio, my dear matron! Have no fears, Herr Mozart. Your humble servants shall not cease their labors on your behalf till the admiral of the night turns his long beak ships towards the dawn and smites her golden throne with jet-black spears of darkness. Brio, Mr. Machin! God bless you, sir! Brio!
They sail on, our chums, innocent of their fate.
Do you know what I would like for my supper, my precious one?
Tell me, Father.
Mast, acorns and cornel berries, a Tusker's chine, bread and a choice of dainties served by a staid housekeeper, sparkling wine, a goat's paunch stuffed with fat and blood.
Father and daughter promenade arm in arm on the sun-sated deck. Mr. Deeds bows and doffs his hat to the long-legged ladies of the silvering sea.
Such beauties, my dear Penelope.
Yes, Father.
I shall bed one before the night is out. Oh, yes. Before this night is out, I shall. Mr. Machin, what on earth are you doing?
Being sick.
Oh, Esmond, I do so love you.
Back in the present, we find ourselves once more. Our venue? The tea rooms of Atkinson Sivright's department store. Today's specials? buck rarebit with anchovy sauce, soft cod roes on wholemeal toast, cheese and onion tartlets with loganberry jelly.
Masked acorns and cornel berries, a tusker's chine, a goat's paunch stuffed with fat and blood.
That noise! That bloody noise!
Nauseating, Mr. Sivrach! Quite disgusting!
Look at him! Look at the bastard! He's smiling! He is! He's actually smiling! What the hell is going on in his mind?
Tell him, Mr. Deeds. Tell him.
I took her to my bed that night, long ago, on the briny, and the old ocean liner rocked to the rhythms of our love. Its rise and fall, breasting the waves, nuzzling the troughs, the spume-white furrow of my prow. Repeat, I lay relaxed in my bed. The woman raised herself on one elbow. Her jet black hair cascaded over her snow-white arms. Her eyes smoldered damson dark. She looked down on my naked body as she smiled. She spoke. Her voice was husky. I hear it now. I hear it now.
I'm going to turn you into a tusker.
He looks so pleased with himself. That's what I can't get over, Mr. Martindale. He looks so smug and self-satisfied.
And he can't play for Toppy, can he, Mr. Sivrite?
When he's done, send him immediately to my office. Tell him I wish to speak to him on a matter of vital importance.
Certainly, Mr. Sivrite. It'll be a great pleasure, Mr. Sivrite.
Come in, Mr. Deeds.
Thank you, Mr. Sivrite. Too kind, too kind.
Please be seated.
Certainly, my dear sir. Only too delighted to oblige.
Would you care for sherry? A Madeira, perhaps?
Ah, Madeira, the fortifier of the gods. Indeed, I would adore a glass of same.
Mr. Deeds.
Hmm?
I have something to say to you, which I fear you might find somewhat unpalatable.
Ah, Mr. Sivrite, how little you know me. No words uttered from the lips of any member of your beloved family could possibly grieve or incommode a mere mortal like my humble self.
Your band stinks.
What?
Your band stinks. It's rubbish.
What?
The music you play is crap. You play it badly. You play it appallingly badly, unbelievably badly.
I'm hearing things. Tell me, dear sir, that I'm hearing things.
Indeed you are, Mr. Deeds. You are hearing the truth. Never in the whole of my life have I heard music played so diabolically badly as the performance I had the misfortune to hear this afternoon. It was gruesome. It was repulsive, repelling, and totally repugnant in every possible way. It was irredeemably offensive. In other words, Mr. Deeds, it stank. It stank to high heaven.
I see. Well, then, Mr. Sivrite, bearing in mind and taking into account the gravity of the situation, there is only one thing I can say to you.
And that is?
Next time, we might play better.
Back to the briny. Back to the salt-spewed ocean liner and its buck and its bounce and the creak of its timbers and the gnashing of its plates. In the third watch of the night, when the stars had passed their zenith, the storm struck. There was no salvation for the stricken liner. She shuddered from stem to stern. The passengers screamed. The passengers lamented. The black sky blotted out the world. The gods hurled out their thunder and struck the SS Foxrock with the flamed tongues of their lightning. The whole ship reeled to the blows of the bolt and was reeked with sulfur. Men and women were flung overboard and tossed around the snow-white Foxrock's hull like stricken gulls on the giant billows of the surf. they took to the lifeboats. Huddled in one, damp as toads, fearful as leverets, were Mr. Vasileva Konstantinos and his mistress of the towering mottled thighs, Mr. Leslie Deeds, violin, Miss Penelope Deeds, cello, and Mr. Esmond Machin, accordion, kettle drum, and Northumberland pipe.
Well, I must say that was rather precipitate behavior, don't you think?
What, Father?
Throwing themselves overboard like that. Quite outrageous. And how typically Greek.
The storm subsided. The seas calmed their motion. They drifted in the open boat for 9 days. And then a wisp of smudgy smoke appeared on the horizon.
It's a ship! Look! It's a ship! Oh, we're saved!
Indeed they were. The ship drew alongside them, and ropes and ladders were thrown to them by swarthy sailors with crusted beards. Lining the rails above them, they saw the other survivors of the stricken and foundered SS Fox Rock. They saw the master with his ginger hair and wine-dark eyes. They saw the purser with his one hideous eye. They saw the cabin boy. By God, he was a ripper! And all of them shouted and cheered as the occupants of the lifeboat were hauled aboard.
My friends, my fellow voyagers, too kind, too kind. How can I repay you for your salutations and felicitations and... I know the very thing. Members of the ensemble, if you please.
The rehearsal room is bleak. The eyes of the musicians are bleak. In silence they watch a strut-shouldered spider spindle across the warp of the boards. The eyes of the windows are bleak. Creak go the hinges of the doors. Creak go the hinges of their hearts.
Never, never, ever. Never, never, never have I been spoken to in that manner. Never, never, ever. He said our music stank.
He's right.
I beg your pardon. What's that you say, Athena?
Nothing, Leslie. Nothing of importance.
I was born in Warrington.
Where?
Warrington. It's a small town in Cheshire.
I know.
We should play selections from the Beatles.
I beg your pardon. What's that you say, Athena?
Nothing, Leslie. Nothing of importance.
I once played with Sir John Barbarolli.
Where?
Well, I don't know. We were only children.
I am low in spirit. Pessimism courses through my veins. My bones ache with despair.
The Rolling Stones, Tom Jones, Engelbert Humperdinck. We should play selections from them. We've got to modernise ourselves. We've got to get rid of the past. We've got to grasp the future with open arms.
I beg your pardon. What's that you say, Athena?
Our music is crap, Leslie Deeds. Total, unutterable crap.
June the 16th, in the year 1948. They are playing for the troops. The Malayan emergency, no less.
Curious chappies, the Malaysians.
I've fallen in love with a sapper.
So many suitors my daughter has, my lovely, lovely, faithful Penelope. So many suitors, and all of whom she keeps at bay with steadfast loyalty and unbreached chastity.
June the 16th in the year 1950. They are still playing for the troops. The Mau Mau emergency.
Curious chap is, the Kikuyus.
I've fallen in love with a gunner.
So faithful, so loyal, so chaste, my lovely, lovely Penelope.
Oh, if only he'd give me one. If only, if only.
The rehearsal room is bleak. The eyes of Mr. Leslie Deeds are bleak. The spider is gone.
This isn't like you, Leslie, being down in the dumps.
I know, dear lady.
This isn't the Leslie Deeds I met at the Homage to Lehar Convention in Scarborough all those years ago.
Six?
Seven.
We met on the Tuesday.
Wednesday.
You were wearing a navy blue dress.
Bottle grey.
Your hair was cascading over your shoulders.
It was done up in a bun.
Will you bloody well stop contradicting me, woman?
Sorry.
I can't stand being contradicted.
Oh, no.
Then why do it, I ask you again. I repeat myself. Why do it? Why?
That's it, Leslie Deed. You've got your dander up. You're angry. I like it when you're angry. I love it when you rage and storm. Rage and storm for me now, Leslie. Now.
Wednesday, did you say? Is that the day we met?
That's right. June the 16th. It was tipping it down.
Ah, yes, I remember it well. We were all washed up, the ensemble and I, washed ashore on the bleak and barren beaches of our failure. We had had no work that summer. Even the cornucopia of Great Yarmouth had bolted shut its doors against us. Ramsgate was a wilderness. My daughter Penelope, the radiant apple of my eye, the chaste rejecter of panting suitors, was reduced to labor of the most menial nature. Whilst the packing of radishes, I sometimes asked myself in moments of blackest despair, gainful employ for one who had so nearly gained admission to the Guildhall School of Music, denied her ambition solely by lack of ability. Those pure white, willowy, sinuous, sensuous fingers which had played at the gossamer heartstrings of Bruch and Brahms, reduced to snouting and snuffling through salad vegetables of the coarsest and basest variety. How I wept, how I wailed. And Machin, accordion, banjolele, kettle drum, and Northumberland pipes. Poor chap. Reduced to playing his pipes in a pedestrian underpass in one of the more unsavory environs of southwest London. What tunes did he play, I often wondered to myself. How often did he change his underpants? Were his nasal hairs still in good nick? It could not continue. It could not go on. We took to the road, in the camper van, in search of work, all of us in the van. All of it in vain. And then, Scarborough. And then, my dear Athene, I met you. I met your good self. Ah, yes, I remember it well.
Good morning.
I beg your pardon, madame.
Are you by any chance a fellow oboist? You've got that look in your eyes.
Would you care to repeat that query, an observation, madame?
I was asking if by any chance you happen to be a fellow oboist.
Madame, I have to tell you that during a long and eventful life devoted solely to the world of music and carnality, I have never in any clime, under any circumstance, precarious, parlous, or propitious, been addressed in such a manner on first meeting a member of the opposite gender. Am I a fellow oboist? The answer to that question, dear lady, is no. An unequivocal no. No, I am not a member of the woodwind fraternity. I am a member of the bards of the singing strings, the pluckers of compliant gut, the strummers of tender tinctured timbers. In short, madame, I play the fiddle.
Oboe and fiddle, woodwind and string, the perfect duality. How natural that they should repair early that evening to the good lady's bedchamber.
You have noble feet, dear lady. Noble plates indeed.
Thank you very much.
Your buttocks please me no end.
Thank you.
Not at all, dear lady. My compliments on your shins.
Thank you very much.
And the lobes of your ears. How they wobble, how they quiver. Ah, yes. Quiver and wobble, wobble and quiver.
Why do you always keep repeating yourself?
I, dear lady, repeat myself. I?
Yes, you. Oh, this. Do it again.
Let us intrude no further. Let us rather pull hard at the reins of the stallions with their flame-spewed nostrils as they halted the mad skelter of time's winged chariot. Whoa there! Hold hard, my beauties! Not so fast! Relax! No need to be slaves to convention. The sequence of the years is ours to shuffle as we will. Let us revel in that power. Let us feast on it. Let us sacrifice bulls and hogs in our joyous celebration of that power, cloud gatherers all, wielders of the magic wand. And so we flick back through the years once more. Look, do you see him? That bent figure in the shabby, ankle-flapping raincoat. He wears a grease-scoured beret. His hands are mittened. Around his neck he carries a cardboard gas mask case. In his hands he carries coal-black instrument cases of various shapes and sizes. The wind is timid. The swift screech and swoop. Voles snuffle. It is June the 16th. The year is 1942. The hunched figure in the tattered raincoat consults a scrap of paper he takes from inside the rim of his beret. He checks the number on the door of the mean-scowled terraced house. He knocks on that door. It is opened.
Well?
My name is Esmond Machin. I believe you are expecting me.
My dear sir, enter. Come in, do come in.
Mr. Machin enters the house. He is conducted into the back parlour. A lanky, shaft-shouldered girl rises from a flustered chair and blushes scarlet as a cardinal's sock.
My daughter, Penelope. Say good day to Mr. Machin, Penelope.
Good day, Mr. Machin.
Good day.
It was love at first sight. I fell in love with him there and then, madly, passionately, wildly, without fear, without caution. I abandoned myself entirely to the worship of his body. And I was only 15 3/4, and totally ignorant of the reproductive systems of the human body, both male as well as female.
Tea, Penelope. Prepare tea for our guest. Mash the enchanted weed, my dear.
Yes, Father.
And now, Mr. Machin, your history. If you please, your history.
Well, sir, I am here in answer to your advertisement in the Evening Argus and Chronicle regarding your search for...
Yes, Mr. Machin, we shall take that as read. What I am concerned about is your history. Everyone has a history, my dear sir. What is yours?
I was born in Warrington.
My condolences.
My father was a traveller in wholesale stationery.
Condolences once more.
He travelled the length and breadth of the land. In his bags, he carried his samples. Blotting paper in shades of pink, green and navy blue. Envelopes, Manila and linen, office and private. Staples, clips, hinges for stamps, set squares, rulers, compasses, pens, pencils, nibs, ink, both black and washable blue.
Yes, 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 Mr. Machin, all very interesting. But time passes. Time nips at our ankles. Time frets and mopes. Time strains at its leash like a fretful dog. Time demands to be taken walkies.
It is from my
father that I inherited an abiding interest in office furniture. On the whole, I prefer mongrels. I think they're more faithful.
There we are. Time has been taken walkies. Time is content. Please continue, Mr. Machin.
I was called up at the outbreak of war.
Poor man, poor man. How the military uniform itches round the privates.
I was wounded. They discharged me. Unfit for service, they said. I made my way home. I was not expected. I found my wife in the arms of a lover. She was not discommoded. Quite the reverse. They laughed at me. My wife and her lover. And together they plotted to dispose of me.
Ah, yes. Ah, yes. The husband returns from the wars. The unfaithful wife slays him. No mercy shown. No remorse. How was the deed to be done, Mr. Machin? Poison, strangulation, disembowelment with a golden spear, garrotting with the singing strings of a minstrel's lute.
No. They planned to push me under a trolley bus.
Tell me, dear sir, tell me.
Well, the trouble with that plan was the town in which we resided did not have trolley buses.
We did not possess a piano stool.
And so Mr. Machin's tale was told. And such was the spell he had cast on the whole company that not a sound was heard throughout the shadowy parlour, till at last Mr. Deeds turned to his guest and said,
"Bravo, Mr. Machin, bravo! How wondrous, how glorious the soaring heights and the plummeting troughs of your history! Ah, the dangers! Ah, the delights! Ah, the failures! Ah, the fulfilments! An epic of courage and disaster, dear sir, a true epic. I have just one question to put to you.
Yes?
How well do you play the ukulele?
Adequately.
And the bongos?
With feeling.
Splendid, splendid. Mr. Machin, consider yourself engaged.
Oh.
Welcome, my dear sir, to the bosom of the Telemachus Trio.
Oh, thank you. I am deeply honored.
Penelope?
Yes, Father.
It is time to celebrate. Mix the mellow wine, child. Sacrifice the spam.
Another whip of time's thrashing tail. The bedchamber in Scarborough, pearl of the North Yorkshire coast. The washstand, the cracked mirror, the stiff-winged fulmar, beetling the cliffs.
Oh, Leslie. Leslie. Leslie, wake up!
What? What's that you say, Athene?
Oh, Leslie. I need you. I want you. I must have you. Now. Now, I say.
I can't, Athene.
Why not?
I am exhausted, madame. Totally exhausted. I have been trapped here in your bedchamber 8 nights.
Seven, Leslie. Seven.
Seven. 7 nights and 7 days. You will not let me leave. I am a prisoner of your randy passions and your sensuous rompings. Let me free, Athene. Let me loose from my bonds. You have defeated me. I am a vanquished man.
Leslie Deeds, listen to me.
Most certainly, dear lady. But first, would it be too much trouble for you to remove from my vision your noble, soaring twin ramparts of delight and desire? Put them away, Mrs. Clyte. I beg you, put them away.
Leslie Deeds, what a villain you are to say such a thing. It shows the crafty way your mind works. These breasts of mine are spread out before you for your delectation. They are yours, to do with as you wish. And so is my oboe.
But I don't want your oboe, Athene. I do not need it. We are a trio, dear lady, a trio, a trio. We are content in our misery. We are replete in our failure.
Oh, Leslie, Leslie, let earth be my witness with the broad sky above and the curdling oceans below that I have no secret plans for your discomfiture. Of course I don't. I am thinking only what I should do on my own behalf if I found myself in your plight. Believe me, Leslie, I have some sense of what is fair, and my heart is not a block of iron. I know what pity is.
Then pity me, dear madame, and set me free from your chamber.
I can't tempt you to stay of your own free will.
No, it is my destiny to voyage on in my long search for perfection.
And you are aware of the full measure of the misery you are bound to endure before you reach your goal?
Yes.
Then go with one last kiss.
One last kiss, Athene. One last long linger over the apple-gold lushness of your lips and the sparkling, clinging, throbbing headwaters of your tongue.
And now go.
Goodbye, Athene. Farewell, my love.
Just one thing before you leave.
Yes?
It's a little something which I think might interest you.
Yes?
It concerns my late husband.
Ah, I trust, madame, this is not going to be...
He left me £55,000.
What?
And if you were to allow me to join your ensemble, then I should be only too happy to,
Ye gods, Mr. Martindale! It's just as bad as ever, it's quite ghastly.
I know, Mr. Sivright, and they've been rehearsing non-stop night and day ever since you gave them that shuriken. They've never stopped practicing.
It's appalling. It's monstrous. Yet there's one thing puzzles me very deeply, Mr. Martindale.
And what would that be, Mr. Sivright?
The customers. They actually seem to enjoy it. They can't get enough of it.
Indeed, they cannot. They are avaricious for it. Those flop-brimmed brigands of the Eccles Cakes. Those tight-bosomed charioteers of the Chelsea Bun and the Chitterling Soup.
Oh, they're very good, aren't they, Winifred?
Certainly they are, Pauline. I think they aid your digestive processes, don't you? Mm,
certainly they do, Winifred. Although I sometimes think they clash more than somewhat with Scotch woodcock. Don't you?
Mm. It gets worse, Mr. Martindale. It does. It gets a bloody sight worse.
No, I know, Mr. Sivright. I know only too well. It makes you tantamount to feeling poorly, doesn't it?
Something has to be done, Mr. Martindale. Decisive action has to be taken.
He's called me in for another meeting.
Oh, my God. We're doomed.
I love you, Leslie Deeds. I love you and I adore you.
The long voyage we made in search of perfection. The perils and hardships we endured together. And together we fought our enemies with saw, axe, and gimlet. And when, finally, fate washed us ashore, here on this blessed isle of peace and content, I thought we had at long last reached our goal. We were home once more. Home. And now the two-handed goblet is snatched from our grasp. The sparkling wine is splattered in the dust. The goat's paunch is shriveled and empty. What to do? Oh, my friends, what to do?
I love you, Esmond. I love you and I need you. I need a man. And it is you, Esmond. You.
There's a Mr. Deeds to see you, Mr. Sivright.
Yes.
Right then, Mary, send him in, will you?
Right, you, Mr. Sivright.
Mr. Sivright, I am come.
Well then, Mr. Deeds, it is my somewhat painful and unpleasant task to have to tell you...
Enough, Mr. Sivright, enough. My dear sir, before you commit yourself irrevocably and irreversibly to a course of action, which in later years you may come to regret most bitterly, may I be permitted the courtesy and privilege of addressing a few words to you, tête-à-tête, and person to person?
But of course, Mr. Deeds, please feel free to do so.
I am obliged. Well then, my dear sir, let us not beat about the proverbial bush. Correct me if I am wrong, but according to my sources, which I assume most fervently are correct and accurate in this matter, you are a man of bachelor status. Am I right in that assumption?
Yes.
You are not a pansy.
Pardon?
You have an eye for a cunning and comely thigh. You have an ear for the sighs and swoons of ecstasy when a lady surrenders to the advances of your loins.
Well,
You are unattached, Mr. Sivright. Indeed you are. My sources are adamant on this matter. You are currently in absentia of the charms and the wiles of female companionship.
Mr. Deeds, what are you getting at?
Simple, Mr. Sivright. Simplicity itself. I am offering you my daughter.
What? What's that you say?
I offer my daughter Penelope to you. You may do with her as you wish. She is yours, Mr. Sivright. She is all yours.
The man's mad, Mr. Martindale. He's stark, staring, barking mad.
Indeed he is, Mr. Sivright.
He turned her down. He actually turned her down, Athene. The man's mad. He's stark, staring, barking mad.
Yes, Leslie, yes.
What would I want with a great, scrawny straggler of a girl like that? Wrists like gnarled carrots, spindly teeth, a raven's nose, breasts as thin as withered thorns. Me, Martindale. He offered her to me.
The man's obviously pots for rags, Mr. Sivright.
Such a desirable young woman, Athene. So many suitors plying for her hand. Suitors eating me out of house and home. Suitors squabbling outside my gates. Suitors sneering at me, mocking me, reviling me. But not once did she yield to their blandishments. Faithful, loyal, and chaste, she has remained all these years. And now she is spurned. Now she is cast into the snuffling, hog-snouting dirt.
Oh, Leslie, what is to become of us?
You are fired, Mr. Deeds. You are dismissed. You are no longer required. You are finished. This is the end of the road.
The stallions are unhitched from their chariot. Time plods on, hunchbacked and weary. The swineherd tends his flocks. The seaman tends to his ropes. The drovers tend to their curly knotted sheep. The fat fruit of the olive. The sad, wistful song of the vine. No. No, we cannot leave it at that. One more minute, if you please. Let us play the music of time once more. Let us tamper with it, distort it. Backwards. Ever backwards. Stop now, stop. There. There we are. Let's have another try. One, two, three. Start again.
I love you, Esmond. I love you and I need you. I need a man. You, Esmond. You.
Yes. Yes, I'm waiting.
And I need you, Penelope.
And we shall marry?
Oh, yes, Penelope. Let us marry at once. Yes. Yes. Yes!
A saw, an axe, and a gimlet. All that is needed for a happy, a contented, and totally fulfilled life. We drink now the sweet, mellow wines of perfection attained. Our farewell concert, the final bow. Perfection. Play, my friend. Play ditties to charm and enchant us. Let the music transport each one of you to the homecoming of your dreams. May it beguile you and soothe you. May it arouse you and excite you. And when you die, may it still play in the soft, cool ruts of your shadows. Play on, my dears. Play on. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, dear friends all, what can I say? Thank you. Too kind. My heart is clammed. My veins sag. The wings of the fulmar droop. I am overwhelmed. All I can say to you, dear friends, is this. I offer you, fellow travelers, the one morsel of comfort that may be the ultimate savior of mankind. The only words that may liberate us from our fate of bleak, dust-choked, bone-bleached extinction. Next time, we might play better.
In Next Time We Might Play Better, Mr. Deeds was played by Graham Crowden. The narrator was Hugh Dixon. Mrs. Clyte, Jilly Mears. Penelope, Carolyn Jones. Esmond, Christopher Scott. Mr. Sivright, Stephen Thorne. Mr. Martindale, Anthony Ofebu. Mr. Constantinos, Jared McDermott. His mistress, Tracy Ann Oberman. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The violinist was Michael Haslam, who was also the musical director and arranger. The oboist was Tanya Kirk, the cellist Judith Herbert, the accordionist Kevin Street. Other instruments were played by members of the band. Technical presentation, Tim Sturgeon and Colin Guthrie. Next Time We Might Play Better was written by Peter Tinniswood and directed by Enid Williams.